Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm Andy Packham and we are in your ears in association with the fabulous Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a return to winning ways on Saturday as Newcastle made the long trip south and went home with nothing after a brace from sommelier-in-chief Danny Welbeck saw us home with the points. Danny's winning goal was one that also took him level with the late, great Michael Robinson as Albion's all-time leading scorer of goals in the top flight. This weekend, we travel to Manchester to take on a United side who have just won two games in a row for the first time under Ruben Amorim. Our former Old Trafford has been decent of late. Can we win two successive league games for the first time this season? Then on Wednesday, we are back in Cup action and 7,000 of us will travel to the Emirates to see us take on Arsenal and close out the set. Six love, six love, six love. Oh, hang on. We can dream, right? Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wes, and we are delighted to welcome back journalist, author, musician, and all-round good egg, Nick Trepanek. Hello, Nicholas. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, pretty good. Thanks. Yes, happy to be here, as ever.
Good to see you. I'm liking your Samuel Beckett look at the moment. It's very DD.
I'm inspired by probably more Ian McKellen than Patrick Stewart.
Well, yeah, I think you're talking. Well, Patrick Stewart is actually presenting the show.
yeah, he can read though, so that's all right.
Have you actually seen that version of it with McKellen and Stewart then, Nick?
No, I haven't. But I'm getting cultural tomorrow. I'm off to the Globe to see Troilus and Cressida.
Good grief! That was a quiz question in the Guardian on Saturday. Actually, it's one of the two Shakespeare plays set in Turkey. I did see that the McKellen and Stewart version of the. Don't tell me. Waiting for Godot, thank you. All about probably 15, 20 years ago. 15 or 20 years ago. And it gives you an example of how exalted those two are when you realise that their support actors were Simon Callow and Ronald Pickup. Themselves, no slouches when it comes to sort of treading the boards and being a lovely
a
fest.
Supporting cast.
But Alan, you were talking about Turkey. And you know what Turkey is?
Tell me.
It's a type of bird. And two birds went to war on Saturday as the magpies took on the seagulls. And I'm just getting you back to football. I mean, we're like a bit of culture here on Radio
Reverb. I'm more than happy to talk about Waiting for Godot. It's a brilliant play. translates well back into English. And...
Yes, and we're currently sat in Worthing, which is God's waiting room. So there we go.
Nick,
it used to be, actually. It's not so much that anymore. Is it? But it's
anyway, Newcastle.
Newcastle, yes. And it was. JP said after the game, Nick, that it was our best performance of the season so far. Would you agree?
He sort of said that. I think a journalist not very far from this podcast said that's looked like the best performance of the season. Is that what you thought? And I think he said something like, yeah, we're all very pleased. So I'm not sure he volunteered the information in the mix zone, but he agreed with that proposition. Yeah, no, I thought it was the best performance of the season. It was very convincing. And what I liked most about it, and I think what most people liked, is that instead of sort of collapsing after they equalised and just defending, we went for the winner and got it.
It was actually a game, I thought, that where... You know, I thought the Newcastle were pretty poor in the first half. I thought their defence was... There was one time where Newcastle had won the ball back and the easy pass was to pass it back to Pope and they didn't. And it screamed, we don't trust your kicking. And they passed it amongst the defence. And meanwhile, Rutter, who was quite the live wire, you know, was getting in there and closing them down. And I think they made a pig's ear of the clearance in the end. They needed.
Yeah, was that the one where
nothing really came of it. It was a piece of action where nothing really came of it. But I just thought you're actually playing yourselves into trouble here, and it wasn't the first time it had happened. but and it's not one of those that's ever going to get shown on Match of the Day or anything like that. But what it did show was that I thought that Newcastle looked actually looked shot to pieces on confidence in that first half. They were decent.
Well, I
going
don't
forward.
Suppose they like their, you know, their three man midfield, which some people have said is the one of the best in the Premier League, being completely dominated by our couple of kids in Baleba and Ayari, who were all over them, I thought, in the first half.
Yeah.
And our midfield generally, you know, we were just passing little triangles through them as if they weren't there.
And that's a very key point there, Nick, because it was obviously we've had issues with Baleba this season. We haven't seen the best of him this season. But on Saturday, he really showed signs that he was actually getting over his funk and it was getting back
right
to his best.
Right back at it, I thought, yes. You know, look, confident on the ball, driving forward, happy to sort of sit and let Ayari go up and support Jorginho. I thought everything about this, particularly the first half, was very good. I mean, I think we said at half-time, didn't we, that Newcastle couldn't be that bad again, and they weren't. But, of course, that meant because Eddie Howe had been forced into substitutions, he'd had to make radical changes. And I think Jacob Murphy was definitely the guy who made the difference in them in the second half.
You have read my notes. That's exactly what I've got on here. That like that Newcastle were much better after Murphy came on. But I mean, you know what? I mean, it's a stupid thing to say, but I actually thought it was a really good game of football in the end. Both teams were having a go. Both teams were trying to score goals. Both teams were trying to win it.
Probably for the neutrals, a decent game, I'd have thought. But
still second last on Match of the Day, of course.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think it's a bit like the cup game last season up there. It was a fascinating one to watch from a neutral's point of view. It was probably a decent cup game. From our point of view, you could see two sides that are fairly evenly matched. I mean, for all the fact that we think that Newcastle, and they do play good football, and in the second half they proved that they do. In the first half, we did. And there's been a couple of times where I've watched Brighton play in Newcastle and I'm thinking, well, we need to buck our ideas up. And you hear the Newcastle fans afterwards saying Brighton were really good. And the one I specifically remember is probably about 2 or 3 years ago. It was the beginning of the season. It was played in a heat wave. It was something ridiculous, like 35 degrees. And we thrashed them 0-0. Now, the weird thing is that they're coming back to us and saying, Newcastle fans saying, yeah, I was at that game. You absolutely bossed us. How we got away with a point was daylight robbery. And I remember that game as being a bit more even. So maybe I've kind of got the anti-cyclops of watching the Albion when we're playing Newcastle. Because, yeah, our results look really good against them. But that doesn't say that we boss them in the way that we do, say, West Ham in the past or Wolves in the past.
Well, I mean, if you look at the 1-1 draw with the three penalties last season, I think Newcastle, that actually was us getting away with. I thought, you know, that was a 1-1 draw that they more than deserved. But I thought we were the better team for most of this game. And I think, you know, we looked as if we'd moved forward. I suppose the difference is they lost Isak to Liverpool and replaced him with Walter Maden. We were obviously concerned about him because of the practice, including possible use of the reserve kit man, to duplicate the 6'6" forward. But whatever the plan was, I thought it worked brilliantly because he only had really one chance and he scored a great goal. But that was one where you couldn't really fault Van Hecker because, you know, it was a great piece of improvisation. If anybody had slightly fault Bruggen for getting down very slowly to it, but I think the way they kept Voltimada away from any danger and dominated him in the air for most of the rest of the game, I thought was very good.
He had that one chance at the end of the first half, which was a header that he really should have done better with.
But he was forced very wide, and also Dunk had another of his, you know, really great, very majestic games. I thought he was in, and there was that one block tackle. In the first half. You know, you think he's, I mean, I've been wondering why we haven't seen Buscagli, but that's the sort of answer, really. If Dunk's playing like that, then nobody's
putting that shirt away. Is Dunk back?
No. How far away had he ever gone? Oh, he was, you know, the confident Dunk, you know, nodding the ball back to the goalkeeper looking like he was really enjoying himself as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got it written down here, actually. I mean, I've got the resurgence of Dunk. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, I think that, I mean, You've said on this show before that last season was a difficult one for him. He was coming back from being away with England, not really having a pre-season. He was carrying a knock, and he wasn't quite at full fitness most of the season, really. And he was out there playing possibly when he shouldn't have been. So now we've actually brought in the likes of Bascali and
Coppola.
Coppola. He's now got competition for places at the back there, and he's under pressure. And if his level does drop, there's a very good chance he'll be out of the team.
You're saying that Aaron Cashin wasn't competition?
Well, he's not even playing for Birmingham at the moment, is he?
Yeah,
So.
well forgotten, AD. But no, the point is, I don't think that's the sort of thing that necessarily motivates Lewis Dunk, because he's always had competition. It's not as though. We've been particularly starved of centre backs over the past few years. I mean, for if you're talking about his performance, there was the obviously the commanding and the leading the team, but then there was the gung ho stuff. Both him and Van Hecke throwing themselves in front of the ball. I don't know if the block tackle you're talking about, Nick, was the one where basically three Newcastle players. Were steaming down the left side,
That
and
was in the
Lewis
second
Dunk
half,
was the
yeah.
last
That was a
one.
sliding tackle, yes. There
Yeah.
was one where Voltomada was going through, and he just basically stood right in front of him and just put his foot on the ball, and Voltomada fell over.
Thou shalt not pass.
Yeah. No, but he got the ball and did. I mean, that was the thing about Voltomada. He scored that goal, and the only other thing he did through that game was moan, especially once we got the second goal. He was chief moan. He was the what do you call it? The moan master general.
I don't know. I mean, there was little bits of it. I mean, I wasn't really paying too much attention to him, to be honest. But fortunately, our defenders were, and there were some nice little bits of interplay that he was doing. It was linking well, but
If you
it was
look at it,
like.
if you look at his performance versus, say, that of not necessarily Welbeck, but that of Rutter, you could see that Rutter, I think, was working a lot harder.
Well, they're different type of players, though. And actually, I mean, Jorginho this season hasn't really actually pulled up any trees yet. And again, like we were saying about Belabor just there, I think this was his best performance of the season as well, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously the assist for the first goal, great weight on the ball and running at the defence. And I was looking at the two Newcastle centre halves and wondering what they were actually trying to do to stop that. I thought Botman had turned his back on the ball and was facing in the wrong direction. But great, just a great goal and so simple really when you think about how we
It was a
labour
straight
sometimes
line.
to break down defences. But and you thought, well, why don't we do that more often?
Do you
It
think
was. I
Pope
mean,
went.
that was the recurring theme of the game. Out. It was like a lot of the stuff that we're doing. Rather than, I mean, we're so used to like the balls going out to Minteh or out to Matoma and everything coming wide and then coming back in. But in this game, a key feature was the fact that a lot of stuff, in fact, both goals all came through the middle.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the only two moves that went through the middle, and they were
No,
both
there was a
goals
few.
because everything in the first half was a lot of it was going to Minter. They gave him an awful lot of space, and he did so little with it. I think that the phrase, if you excuse the cliche here, it's flattered to deceive. I mean, he got the ball, he'd approach, and then if there was a right and a wrong decision, a flip of a coin, he would get it wrong each time. And
Well, he's too one-footed, unfortunately. I mean, the trouble is he's being put. Dan Burn knew that he was going to come inside onto his left foot. There was almost no chance he was going to try and go outside him on his right. So, in fact, you just whenever he outpaced Dan Burn or looked as if he was going to get into some space, he turned back, and the pass or the cross was largely intercepted.
First half, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Second half, it's clear that someone had had a word with him at half time because he did actually then get down to the byline a couple of times. He didn't even try and do that in the first half. Second half, he did. And I wouldn't say necessarily created chances, but he did create a bit more havoc. And even just doing it once and say failing, with the ball accidentally being knocked out of play, at least it gives Burns something else to think about because, as you just said, Nick, he knew that he was going to cut inside. As soon as he started doing it, going down the line in the second half, it gave Burns something else to think about.
Well, the thing is, we know Dan Burn, and we've seen him absolutely terrorised by fast wingers. Dama Traore is the man who comes to that. And you think, oh, great, Minteh, one of the fastest players we've ever had up against Dan Burn. But as the game went, you know, the first half went on, you thought this isn't quite working out as we'd hoped. Second half, as you say, much better.
Absolutely. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I
So,
mean, it's.
the goal then, we just it was obviously Welbeck's first of the game, and it just happened in a straight line. It was like Van Hecke to Jorginho to Welbeck, and it just kind of like you could draw a line of where it started and where it finished. It was like the defending them, it must have just turned off. But the key question here is, was it a dink? Was it a chip? Or was it a wedge?
That was a dink.
Was
I
a
think
dink.
looking at the various match reports, I think dink was the vote there.
Yes.
Oh, of course, we've seen this from Newcastle before, when you know the days of the Ferguson hat trick against them. You know, sometimes very square defence, and they don't, of course, play two defensive midfield players the way a lot of teams do. They've got that three in front of them, and the way, you know, way through to their defence is a lot more open sometimes than it is for other teams.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, there was more than once. I think Brighton were trying to do that a bit more. I mean, I do, again, on social media, I do re recall seeing a very laudatory comment that someone said that Van Hecke was playing like Beckenbauer, the way he just sort of ping a pass all the way through. And we'll talk about the second goal in a minute, but the way he just then ping a pass to anyone. I mean, he was trying quite a bit to do the big crossfield one to Minté, and they weren't always, not to Minté, he was on the left-hand side. It would have been, I suppose,
Cadioglu.
probably Kadioglu. Who, and that there, right, let's talk about him. Because I thought he was very impressive. He's a reasonable left back. I do prefer De Kuyper there. But when he has been pushed forward previously, I thought he was found wanting. He never knew whether to stick or twist, whether to go forward or back or anything like that. This game, I thought he was actually, I think nearly all of his decision making was pretty good. I mean, there was one time he went flying down the line. There were two players, one going near post, one going far post. The far post one was the correct one. He went for it and he completely cocked it up. But you could see the idea there. I had no problem with him playing the way he did in the position that he did once De Kuyper came on.
I'm going to disagree, but I'm going to ask you, Nick, first. What do you think?
I like Kadioglu as a wing back, and he's actually right-footed, isn't he? Although he tends to play on the left, and that's the weakness that we'd seen before him was possibly in crossing. But he went wide and got a few crosses in. So it's and the fact that the change when
It was
Gomez
Gomez went
came
up,
off
yeah.
was didn't involve Tommy Watson coming on, but involved pushing Kadioglu forward. So he's obviously, you know, cemented his place in Hertzler's thinking. And I liked most of what he did, actually.
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean,
he's not Mitoma, but then who is?
I mean, I think there's a lot more to come from him. I think he's certainly could be very exciting, but I just think the end product, there was four or five occasions where he had the opportunity to find a player running into the box and he failed every single time. And it was always, the ball was just never quite right. Which, okay, yes, you
Oh,
could
but
argue about that. It's
they're
come out of
arguing
other
about
players
that.
arriving as well.
Occasionally, I was thinking that some of the players could have bust a gut to get into the box a bit quicker. But
Yeah.
possibly you're
If
right.
you reckon he is right-footed, I'll tell you what, it didn't show. You know, he looked very confident and didn't think again about crossing with his left.
No. You know, he played as a left back, but I seem to remember reading somewhere he was right footed. Hey, most professional players should be two footed, so let's not
Well,
worry about that.
God. That's one of my many, many Betnoirs. You know, I'm looking at you, Minté. And the point is that I know that Minté can use his right peg for more than just standing on.
Well, his
So,
very first appearance for us away to Everton when he went
absolutely.
past the defender, crossed and Mitoma scored. And you think, well, let's have more of that. And I don't think he did it again all season.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got no problem with Kadioglu. And actually, I don't think since the season started, Nick, we've really had a lowdown on Maxim de Kuyper. Have you come up with any thoughts about him just yet?
I wasn't convinced early on. Probably better attacking than defending. I wondered where he was when Everton scored
Right.
their first goal. But you know, it's a difficult adaptation from the Dutch league to here, and I think he's got better on that. And I like to think we'll do more attacking than defending over the course of the season. So perhaps That's not something to worry about too much. I mean, but then, he's replaced another left back who wasn't brilliant at defending. So he hasn't got, much to do to be a better defensive left back than Purvis.
Fair enough.
That's an interesting one. I always worries me when you start talking about like fullbacks though, Nick, because you have got previous.
Well, as
Both
in he
left
only ever
backs as
comes on
well,
when
I
the.
know.
But it's
I feel like,
but
we've got
again,
two left backs. We've got, we've got Kadioglu and De Kuyper. So, we've got a spare in case I jinx another one.
Well, and the point is that actually the pair of them, even in the same game, are interchangeable. I mean, they're both left backs, and they can both equally play as wing backs as well. So,
Which is why we played a midfielder at right back. So there you go.
now then, where are you on this debate then, Nick? We for at right back.
Well, we signed a guy who'd won a league title for Feyenoord playing as a defensive midfield player. And if you, I'd like to see him play in his best position when Veltman's fit. But then, of course, at the moment, well, on Saturday's evidence, you couldn't drop Belhaber or Ayari from either of those two slots, unless you wanted to play Ayari further forward, which I think you could do. I suppose the Vifa's chance to cement himself in the as a, one of the two number sixes sort of came and went through injury, and now I guess he wants to get in wherever he can, and can't say he really let us down. He doesn't look a natural right back, but he offers perhaps more than Veltman in an attacking way. And of course, his run for the second goal and the way Ayari found him, that was fantastic.
Actually,
Well,
let's talk about
that's it,
that,
because we're
Ada.
seeing this in more. We're seeing Vifa more and more in attacking areas going forward at the moment, and I do want to see him. I've been saying it since last season that I want to see him in that the role that we actually signed him as. He might even be having a word with his agent in January, because I don't think he'll be happy with that.
Oh, if he does, I think that's a little bit petulant, isn't it? I'm playing at right back. I'm not playing in my favourite place. Therefore, I don't want to be here. That's not how a professional footballer should operate.
But of course, the position he took up for that second goal was definitely the sort of thing a midfield player would do rather than a right back, unless you're talking about, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Rather than going wide, he went through the channel into sort of number eight position, and perhaps he gives us, slightly different attacking options from right back as a midfield player.
It's
It's not
not
okay.
the.
Well, let's
I was
talk.
just, hang on, Adi. I was just going to say, you also have to point out, it's not the kind of thing that Veltman would do. Because, for Veltman, that's nosebleed city. I mean, he's not going to go powering through that. And I remember seeing the run. I just saw the kind of this blur when everyone else seemed to be standing still. And then seeing it again on Match of the Day, it's an incredible run, an incredible pass. The only thing is I think that he made a bit of a pig's ear of control in it.
But let's talk about one of the reasons why Vifa isn't playing in the midfield, and that is because Yassine Ayari is there. Now, he's a player that, to be fair, we haven't really given an awful lot of love on this show, to be honest, but he's really beginning to come into his own now. And I mean, we've that ball for that second goal, that was just, well, it was defense splitting. It was just eye of the needle stuff, and it was wonderful.
Well, a great example of somebody who gets given a chance and grabs it with both hands, both feet, and everything else. And he's one of the things about him is this is not a guy short on self-belief. You think about somebody who's been out on a couple of unsuccessful loans, hasn't really had a chance to cement himself, but came on at Arsenal, didn't it? No, in fact, came on at Everton and had a goal disallowed in the first game of last season. Came on, I think, after 20 minutes at Arsenal and. Instantly looked at home alongside Belhaber, and we spoke to him after that, and spoke to him a couple of times since. And he was not thinking, "Oh, I'm so lucky to get my chance." He was saying, "I've been waiting for this, and I'm ready." Every time, every training session, I train as if I'm starting on Saturday. Every time I'm on the bench, I'm looking to see, what I might do if I get on. If I get on in this position, this is the guy I'll be up against. What's he doing? He's a by all accounts a great trainer. He's got his attitude is, well, he's quite intense actually when you speak to him. He's got his ambition, I think, and self-belief is off the charts. And frankly, if you're playing in a Premier League midfield, that's what you want.
I've got to be honest with you. I think he really would. The thing I think he'd really like is to have his own personal goal of the season competition. I mean, he did have an opportunity in the game against Newcastle. I mean, the shot just went flying. But the point is he was prepared to take on the shot where the others might look for a pass or might want to,
Oh, the
sort
one
of
that
play
just
it back.
bent past the angle.
Yeah, quite a way past it, admittedly. But you think. As you'd say, AD, you'd never criticise anyone for taking a shot, apart from maybe Nciso, who would try and take a shot wherever he got the ball.
Yes, but
Yeah, whether that was in his own half or not. I mean, it's interesting point you're making there. I've been more and more confident about Ayari's abilities, but he still does have, I think, a bit of a ricket in each game in him, more so than possibly others. He dropped a couple of rickets on against Newcastle. There was one time when again an easy pass was on and he tried to take on three players instead and of course lost it. There was a time when we had a corner and the ball came out to him on the edge of the area and he took ages to control it and he lost it and there was a breakaway. And that you think, well, for someone who has, as Nick says, that level of confidence and that level of ability, that was a little bit sloppy. But then, like you say, that eye of the needle pass for the second goal was off the charts.
But like I said, he's just getting better and better and better from what
I
I can
think so,
see. And like, and
absolutely.
I was, I mean, last season he was a surprise package, basically. I don't think anyone expected him to play the number of games that he actually did last season. And the fact that he's continued that trend this season. I mean, like, well, Nick, that Fabian wants people to train like they play like they play on a weekend. He doesn't want people slacking off, and he wants that intensity 100% of the time. And that explains why, if he is like that in training, why he's got into the team ahead of Viva, who may not be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, but he made the most of the fact that that some players were unavailable for that tour of Japan, and I know he consciously saw it as an opportunity to impress a new manager and made absolutely sure he did. But that's the attitude you want, isn't it? I think the next question about his attitude is whether he's going to sign a new contract or not. If he suddenly decides he wants to be a holdout and explore the market, that won't be so impressive. But there's plenty of time for our new
When's he
sporting
out of
director to
contract?
sort that out.
I've no idea when his contract runs out, but yeah, like I said, we've got a new champ in place who can sort that sort of stuff out, and I think he'll given his track record, and I think he'll know how to crack some skulls.
Yeah, probably. Okay, well, let's talk about the winning goal then, from that there, Danny Welbeck, and again, we just talked about that ball from Ayari. I've just been watching it again today, and I've just been absolutely purring about that ball to Vifa. Vifa tried to get the shot away, but Danny was on hand to fire it past Pope from the edge of the box. And well, we're going to talk about his record levering feats, Al.
Oh yeah, I mean let's give Dan Burn a certain level of credit here because that was him and Rowan Ince, the two players that spring to mind when it comes to telescopic legs. Admittedly, I don't think I say Vifa's first touch wasn't as great as it could have been, especially given A the pass and B his run. I mean, it's probably the speed that he was running through, but probably would have made it difficult to control it in the first place. So it allowed Dan Burn, who eventually saw the ball coming through, put in a very good block. But then there comes Welbeck following up, which is what you expect, frankly, a striker to do. Albeit it wasn't following up on a keeper's save, it was following up on a tackle from the edge of the area. But he also had the confidence to do that and pick his spot almost. He didn't smash it. It was a bit more than a pass, but I suppose. What's the difference between what's in between to a stroke? He stroked it home.
It's an interesting one as well, and we've seen him do this before when he scores from there. I mean, the natural striker's instinct, possibly, and this is and Tsimas, I think, followed this, was to try and get forward and get into the box, but his inkling was that the ball might just come out on the just be on the edge of the box, and so he hung back, and there was therefore in absolutely the right position. The almost the thing that could have spoiled it was Tsimas being offside in the keeper's eye line. Luckily, he wasn't. But he'd rushed in, which shows possibly the lack of experience, whereas Welbeck's, nous and instinct just told him to hang back and the chance might come there, which it did.
Well, I think therein lies the point about a 16-year age gap between the fact of Danny's going, right, I'll let the youngsters go herring into the box. I'll just hang back here and let me 34-year-old legs do the work. And it was wonderful. And like the two he scored at Chelsea, I mean, I think he himself has acknowledged, and certainly in one of those things that Hertzler said, I think after the Chelsea game where they've got the cameras in the dressing room, where I think it was Hertzler said something like, Danny, it's great that you're back. I think that we could all recognise that Welbeck hasn't been firing on all cylinders so far this season. He's got four goals and it looks great, but let's face it, it's two matches he's scored in, and in the rest he didn't really look like scoring.
No.
So, but then, as they say, was it form is over there and class is somewhere doing some sums, whatever the phrase is. And he'll always be there for you. But the point is that for both the Chelsea game and for that Newcastle game, you could see what it meant to him to actually score those goals and celebrate them in the way he did.
Well, Nick, this was his best game for us this season, I think. That all around the pitch, he was just putting in tackles, he was winning the balls back. He was more energetic than he has been, and actually,
He was a defender.
he was. He was everywhere, and he was great.
I think he likes playing with Jorginho because I think they have, they read each other's minds, and they go in, they drop into each other's positions from time to time. But I mean, Welbeck said after the game that, well, actually, somebody said the manager said you weren't quite at it earlier in the season. He said, "Oh, did he? I hadn't heard that." I think he admitted himself that he hadn't, he could have played better, and that he'd actually taken the decision himself just to sort of knuckle down, work harder, and do everything he could to get back to his own form without blaming anybody else. And that's the mark of the man, I think. He
Plus a
knows
little wind up with Newcastle.
himself. He knows his game. He knows the teammates, and he sorted himself out.
Plus the little wind up of the Newcastle fans.
Oh well, he did say there was a lot of love there. I think he loved
What
playing in
kind of
front of them,
love?
that's for sure. I'm not sure because, of course, apparently there was they were chanting his name at the Stadium of Light, where he was on loan for a season.
This is true. Actually, I did actually feel very sorry for Tommy Watson, who was stripped and ready to come on against a Macken coming on, making your Premier League debut against the Geordies would have been an
But
absolute delight for him.
at least he was playing at the other end of the pitch. It would have been, or he would have been playing at the other end of the pitch.
But it didn't quite happen for him. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you, Alan, in association with the fabulous Flowers Unlimited.
I know. It's good that, isn't it?
It is amazing.
Whatever your reason for sending flowers or gifts, we can help. Say Flowers Unlimited, not the Albion Royal. We're not florists. If it's birthday, anniversary, birth, celebration, thank you, sympathy, sorry, or anything else, we have the answer. That's Danny Welbeck sending flowers to Newcastle fans, I suspect. If it's a wedding or a corporate event, our team will come up with something to wow you. If it's a funeral, we can guide you in choosing a tribute that really reflects the life of your loved one. Trust us to provide you the service and quality you really deserve. That's Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. Or you can go to their website, flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. And if you do pop in there and you happen to be an Albion season ticket holder, the Dear Darlings will actually then give you a 20% discount. So do head over there. Flowers Unlimited, that's 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. While we're on the subject of notice boarding, because I do have something for the notice board. The club just won a happy, or rather, Seagulls on Over London are hosting a special showing of the club documentary Stand or Fall on October the 30th. It will take place from 6:45 at the Genesis Cinema in Whitechapel, and ticket prices are £15 for adults, £10 for under 18s and over 65s, and Seagulls Over London members. The film will be followed by a Q&A with Stand or Fall production staff and club personnel. And if you go to the club website, you'll be able to find that page and you can book your tickets there. So, October the 30th in Whitechapel, there's a showing of Stand or Fall.
Oh, October the 31st in Whitechapel would have been better, but
Yeah,
but
but that film is not a horror show, AD. It's a very good one.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Nick, perhaps you could tell me when it was that football actually started. Because apparently, a lot of people think...
Well, 1992, apparently.
Apparently it did, but it didn't.
The Premier League.
It didn't. Football happened before that. And before
no, it didn't.
And to prove it, we had a striker called Michael Robinson. And he scored 37 goals in the old First Division. That's the Premier League, kids, in case you weren't wondering.
Well, I think I saw most of them.
And as a coincidence... Danny Welbeck has now scored 37 goals in the old First Division. Now
Nick,
known
I mean,
as the Premier League.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, this is finally its achievement. Now, obviously, I think Robbo did his in about three and a bit seasons. Danny's never been the most prolific of goal scorers, but when a landmark is, when a milestone is achieved, it's something to celebrate, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was actually three seasons. Because he left at the end of the third season after the cup final.
Yeah.
And he came in the second season in the First Division. And I was just thinking about the various comparisons because there's quite a debate on a well-known fan website about, you know, who's the greatest top-flight goalscorer of them all for us. And Glenn Murray's in there in the conversation as well, as is Peter Ward. Robinson arrived, I think he was 21. After being seen as a failure at Manchester City.
Yep.
Very different sort of player, marauding centre forward, running through defences, at defences, into the middle of defences. Bustling, I think, was the word that was used about him.
I was going to say, without due care and attention sometimes.
Something like that. Danny's obviously, you know, a different end of his career and has had to... You know, he sort of came to us pre-injured, if you like, with that sort of reputation for not being able to play many games in a season. He's cast that aside, obviously, thanks to a degree to the club looking after him properly. And as we say, it's taken him a little longer to score the goals, but he's... I think with Robinson, it was perhaps more of an instinctive player, you know, run into the middle of the defence, shot as hard as he could.
Yep.
Sometimes it went in, sometimes it cleared the north stand. And I think you get the impression with Danny Welbeck, he's much more of a craftsman, you know, knows his job. He's been there, done it, scored a lot of goals. He's it's much more of a sort of conscious and cerebral effort, I think.
Could he and should he have scored the winning goal in the cup final?
No, he would never have got there. I mean, the run down through, you know, through the Manchester United defence was just a Michael Robinson speciality.
Crash bang wall,
Gordon,
wasn't it?
As Gordon Smith said, the absolute, you know, the thing that completely shook him was that Robinson passed, which he had never been known to do. You know, the odds on that he was going to finish the run with a shot. Which and possibly even score, but for some reason, you know, for once in his career, he looked up, saw somebody free, and passed to him, and the rest, unfortunately, is history.
Yeah, because I mean,
I'm not sure Danny Welbeck would have got there. I think he might still have been crossing the halfway line when Robinson was passing it.
I mean, Robinson, even Pilford, let's face it, he took the ball off. I can't remember if it was Case or if it was Smith or something like that in the semi final as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, Smith.
Yeah, I mean, Smith was just kind of running at the Sheffield Wednesday defence, and I think he possibly just slightly overran it. I mean, it was Robinson's sort of there to finish off, and he managed to turn his man. But let's face it, I mean, Smith was on the ball, and Robinson just pilfered off him.
But it's 37 goals, so level. So one more to go to like take the record outright. I mean, it doesn't seem like a very high amount when you think about it, but then neither did Bobby Charlton's 47, which I mean Harry Kane's now on 76 goals for England, which is that record is absolutely obliterated now. But is anyone ever going to get past 37 or whatever Danny ends up on?
Mitoma has a possibility of doing so, doesn't he?
Premier League many goals are not easy to come by. I remembered Graham Potter being told that, what he needed to make Brighton a complete team was a 20-goal-a-season striker. And he said, well, there are only two. There were only two last season. So it's very hard to score Premier League goals. Mopé, as we remember, he managed to find new ways to fail to score them every week. And he still did score a lot. Glenn Murray scored a tremendous number of goals. Pascal Gross didn't seem to have any problems from midfield. I mean, there it, but he's but his different opportunities opened up for him as a midfield player. We have to believe that in the future there'll be an even greater goal scorer to come along. But at the moment, I'm not sure there's one in the club.
No, I
No.
mean, I think taking Nick's point a little bit further is that when you say you're not looking at so there's only two 20 goal a season strikers in the division. But the other thing is that certainly over the past few years, we've still scored 60, 70, 80 goals a season. Even that time under De Zerbi, the 2023 season, arguably our most successful season ever, where I think we scored something like 95 goals, but they were spread out. I mean, there were four players who ended up in double figures, but no one got more than, I think, 11, I think it was. I could be wrong. Maybe Pedro might have got a few more, but even then, most of them were penalties. So
He
it's
got
not
nine.
about.
He got 19 that season, but yeah, most of them were penalties.
Right.
If you rely on one striker to score all your goals, then the other team knows what to do just to stop you.
Absolutely. So they've got to
Everton
come
won the
from all over
league
the
once,
place.
and Everton won the league once with a midfield player as their top scorer with 12 goals. So it's great to share the goals around because, of course, it means that the other team just has more different weapons of yours to worry about.
More functionality is the word you're looking for,
Oh, is
I
it?
believe.
Well, no, there are so many. I mean, like I say, we spread them. We spread those goals out. We like even when we won the third division under Gus, we still had two players that scored more than 20 goals, and then someone else. When we got promoted under Houghton, we had Glenn Murray who scored more than 20, but he was helped and followed up by with Knockaert. And the other midfielders all weighing in. It's just the nature of football these days is that more players are expected to score. You think of the number of times that Calderon scored from right back, Bruno weighed in now and again. It would be nice to think that Van Hecker and Dunk would actually weigh in with a few more because they really should. It's not your sort of like your classic number nine and number 10 up front banging in the goals. It doesn't work that way anymore. No,
So
I
the point
mean,
you're.
and Minte could score more, and I think will. Obviously, Mitoma has contributed great goals, and a lot of goals.
And in double figures last season as
Jorginho,
well.
yeah, Jorginho, there's goals there for sure. Ayari have suddenly became a scorer of great goals, and just a greater number would be good.
You just think if
Baleba's got a great shot in him.
you just think, I mean, I mean, Nick has just named what half a dozen players there. You just think if four or five of them get to double figures, there's 50 goals just from part of the team. And then when the rest weigh in with two, three, four, each for the season, there's your 80 goals.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think last season we had too many goals from defenders. And again, it's the same again this year. I mean, Van Hekker's got one, hasn't he? Is he ended? Oh no! Oh, De Kuyper scored as well. In fact, De Bruyne nearly scored again at the weekend as well, didn't he? So he's one that's got an eye for goal, and he's scored a few goals for Belgium as well. So that's an exciting prospect. Calhanoglu, he scored last year at Liverpool before getting injured.
And this is it. I mean, there's even if it's just one goal, there's hardly a player that doesn't score one, even just once in
Yeah.
a season.
Of course,
I think last year was our
Diogo
biggest.
Gomez, you would think knows where the net is. I was a bit surprised there was a moment in the first half where he could have pulled the trigger, and you'd have thought, after hitting the net four times at Barnsley, he might have been a bit less reluctant.
Well, I think he was just too close, wasn't he? If he was about 20 yards out, it was probably too close. It needs to be sort of close to the halfway line. I mean,
Yeah.
by the way, even at this stage of the season, is that screamer against Barnsley going to be the goal of the season?
No.
It's going to. What do you have you seen a better one,
Are
or
we
do
going
you
to
just
score it
think
yet?
there will be?
I'm not going to call who's won the goal of the season in October.
Yeah, but I mean, didn't we have that with actually, we'll see. Matoma's goal of the season against Chelsea was in the January, wasn't it? And we called it
Yeah.
then, really. So.
Well, yeah, it was a good goal, but yeah, I mean, those goals of Barnsley were great, but they were against Barnsley, and I think that when we put the compilation together and we see them flying in from all over, I
I think
think
that
that.
the suspicion about the Barnsley goal is that he could hit that another 99 times and it wouldn't hit the net once. It was just an unbelievable strike with an unbelievable curl on it, and his timing was 100% on the money. But running onto a bouncing ball like that, I think there was an element of just lucky about that one.
Yeah, it's a bit like. Do you remember that? I likened it to Yuri Skalak scoring against QPR, I think, and probably not the season we won at, the one before, where you could see it was again, it was a poor defensive header, and you could see him revving up for it, and I think the entire stadium going, "No, don't!" And he absolutely smacks it home.
Sort of goal that goes in when you're already three or four up.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, it's a hell of a way to get your hat trick. I mean, if you're going to show off, you might as well show off like in style.
That's 5 goals for Diego this season, but none in the Premier League. So,
It'll come.
when we want him to do that in the Premier League, we need him to like. I
Or in the
think he
Cup at
will.
Arsenal, if he wants to do it in the Carabao Cup at Arsenal.
More than happy to.
Well, yeah, I suspect we're not going to complete the set, though, Nick. I
Well,
mean, the fact.
when you say six love, as you did earlier, then we'll go through going through on a tiebreaker suits me.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6-4, 6
Seven five.
7-5.
I don't
That
think
will
you can win
work.
it. You can't win a penalty shootout 7-5.
Okay. All right, well let's move it on then. And we've been talking about Yassine Ayari. And he now has a new manager at international level, which the press conference was quite interesting, and the fact that the former Albion boss Graham Potter did it entirely in Swedish. Obviously he spent a long time over there. Were you is this a surprise, Nick?
Well, it's one of those sort of things where logic sort of takes over. You think, oh well, he's lived in Sweden, he's managed in Sweden, he was a successful manager there. He's still got a house in Sweden. Not such a great wrench for the family. It makes perfect sense, so it sort of happened. But he'll find that, obviously, as many former club managers do, is that international management is a very different thing. With long periods with nothing much to do apart from go and watch other games. But I mean, I think he's probably got the hinterland to be able to cope with that, and he'll be aware of it. Whereas I think he'd made, I don't think Chelsea was a bad decision. I think West Ham was a terrible decision, knowing what I know about West Ham. But perhaps I've said too much. But no, I think this. It's interesting. He will have looked at the squad he's got available, and of course, Victor Gyökeres will be one of his a member of his squad, as will Yassine Ayari. So happy days there and some fun times. Although whether he had any faith in Gyökeres when he was an Albion player is moot.
Well, it was him that shipped him out, so
Yeah, he gave
yeah.
him some games as well, but I don't think any of us thought, gosh, this is a prospect who's going to be worth millions one day. We must keep a hold of him at all costs. I mean, you would have rated him behind Aaron Connolly. Certainly behind Evan Ferguson, and I still do rate him behind Evan Ferguson. I think Arsenal will regret that the money they spent on him. I don't think they're getting what they thought they were getting, and I think it's very revealing and interesting that Arteta apparently talked to him about what it would be like to go six games without scoring, and you thought, huh, only six.
Now that I mean, I recall seeing Gyökeres playing for us, and certainly playing for the under 21s, where obviously he shone because, that was just something he was below his level. But when you saw him playing for the first team, and he made eight first team appearances, albeit none in the league, there was four under Houghton and four under Potter. There was a kind of, I don't know what you call it, a weakness. A lack of intensity. It's difficult to put your finger on it. You could see there was something in there, and the goal he scored, I think the one goal he scored for us is against Portsmouth. Hurrah. But yeah, you're right, Nick. You could never see this fella. I've seen fans of other clubs, again, back on social media, I've seen fans of other clubs use it as a stick to beat us with when the narrative comes across of, oh, Brighton's recruitment is fantastic, blah, blah, blah. Oh, but what about Victor Gyökeres? And you're thinking, well, you're picking one person out of about about 18 here. So I think our hit rate's still pretty good.
There's always going to be ones that get away.
And at the time, Gyökeres wasn't what we wanted. And it's only once he moved to Portugal. So let's face it, he did well at Coventry, but Coventry were not a Premier League side at the time. So the proof hadn't been made. Yes, he did very well at a top flight large Portuguese club. I mean, his goal scoring record there was off the charts, and good for him. Does that mean to say he can come back to to England, back to the Premier League, and start knocking it about? Well, so far, I mean, that's not to say he can't. I mean, it's not as though Arteta's rubbish and he's not going to say, well, I've seen him play and he's not that, all that. But, yeah, I think that maybe the figures in Portugal might be a tad flattering.
But if you'd asked me to describe him in one word when he played for the Albion, it would be slow.
Yeah.
I just thought no instant control, no sort of whiplash turns, certainly no pace when running, you know, just average. And at no point did you think, gosh, we've really let one go here. And so far from what we've seen him playing for Arsenal, you think, well, you know, okay, he's okay. He's quite strong. He's playing with, you know, some really good players there. So, you know, there should be a flurry of chances, load of goals. Hasn't quite happened.
I don't think it will. But I mean, the way that Arsenal play, they've needed number nine for ages, someone who will be that block, that lump in the middle, and hold the ball up for them, their flashier players to come and do something with.
But therein lies a point. Therefore, does it show that, okay, if Gyökeres is the best that you can get, or one of the best you can get across Europe, that the role that you're talking about there, AD, is a little bit superfluous, almost to the point of maybe even being redundant?
Number nines are coming back. Look at Danny Welbeck.
No, but I don't see Danny Welbeck as a hold up player necessarily. I mean, his game with his back to the goal isn't, I don't think, is as good as it could or should be. And you know, that whole sort of Duncan Ferguson, even Evan Ferguson type chap is, I mean, it's not to say there isn't a space within the whole remit of football for them, but not many teams set up that way. And I would probably include Arsenal in that. Yeah. I mean, Arsenal's issue is not so much a target man or the hold-up man. It's more to do with having someone to play through rather than play to.
But if we get a fit and firing, confident Evan Ferguson back from Roma, and it still amazes me that Evan Ferguson going to Roma is a step down for him, apparently. It's insane. But I mean, if we get him back and he's got his confidence back and his form back, I mean, that is a player that I want in my side.
Yes, I would have always wanted him to stay here, and I would have wanted Herzog to work with him, and I would have given him a run of games because he's such a potential asset. But that's obviously, you know, why Fab gets the big bucks to make those decisions. And I guess we have to watch and wait and see what happens. I'm still not entirely convinced about what the actual deal is. You know, if Roma have an option to buy, does that mean if he plays well, they can buy him and we can't stop him? You know, in which case, well, you know, how's that a good deal? You know, we only get him back if he doesn't pull up any trees in Rome.
Not sure at this point. I don't know if you've looked into it, because obviously a couple of weeks
ago... I have looked into it, and I know can't seem to get an answer.
Oh, right. I'm just wondering, AD, because a couple of weeks ago when we had Jeremy Smith on, and you did a lowdown of just about every single Albion player in France. Have you had a chance to look through what how he's getting on in Italy?
He's not scored. He's been starting a few. He started a few games. Obviously, pre-season he was scoring lots of goals against Farmers, he's not really doing an awful lot at the moment, and he's not getting as many minutes as he probably want, I don't think. But it's still early. I mean, you know, we know the talent's there.
Yeah.
It's just whether it's. I mean, Gasperini is a really, really good manager. He did amazingly well at Atalanta, working with players like Evan. So I think there's something to come from him.
But getting back to the original sort of like the arc that we've gone on here, going back to the original point of that, which was obviously Potter being given the Sweden gig, albeit on a sort of fairly temporary basis. I don't think it's more of an interim role at the moment. Is that the notion, the nature of Swedish football at the moment, or certainly in the national team, is that they're on a bit of a downer at the moment, and they made a right pig's ear of trying to qualify for the World Cup. Hence the Swedish, was it I've forgotten his name now, but the fellow that got fired. I think it does make a certain amount of sense for Potter to be there. If nothing else, do they have a Swedish person? I mean, but like you say, Potter himself knows the country, and he probably knows most of those players. And it does make a lot of sense, even if it is on a temporary basis. And language is never going to be the issue, albeit sort of most people, Swedish people, speak English, but and so on and so forth. So, yeah, we know that, for instance, it takes a bit of time to for players to transition to what Potter wants. But he also knows how to coach players. And like I say, Sweden do not, they've always been a decent side. They don't turn rubbish overnight. So given what he's got to work with, I think that actually, I wouldn't mind betting. I think this is probably the one gig he will do well with.
Well, I'm sure that Yatanaya is really looking forward to playing it right back. Anyway, moving quickly on. Obviously, we're off to Manchester at the weekend, Nick. Two wins in a row for Amorim at the moment. But a happy hunting ground for us at Old Trafford at the moment. Obviously, they're going to want to win three in the bounce for the first time under him as well. And the bloke with the hair is obviously desperate for him to get to five in a row. Bad news for him, a barber is coming to Old Trafford for this weekend. Hopefully, not for him.
There was a lot of Manchester centric views that, oh, that's three in a row, against Brighton, obviously not looking at past results. Obviously, we've got to be careful not to suddenly think we can just turn up there and win again, because they'll have confidence. But to be honest, they weren't all that against Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool kept hitting the woodwork instead of the net, and there was a lot of good fortune for Manchester United about that. If they think they've suddenly turned some sort of corner because they fluked to win at Anfield, I think they're probably deluding themselves. And we obviously will go there confident. We've got a bit of an unbeaten run. We know the territory. We know we can go there and win. Would we be happy with a draw? I think we probably would. Danny Welbeck will be trying to score, I think, for the fourth time against Manchester United at Old Trafford. I mean, he said after the Newcastle game that it wasn't really anything special going to Old Trafford again. I think he's been there six times, possibly seven, as an opposition player. And as he was told in the Manchester United youth team, play the game, not the occasion. So I think he'll be cold-blooded if a chance comes, and we hope that it does.
And that will be a chance for Danny to take the record. And hopefully we'll be back to talk to you about that next week. But in the interim, thank you so much to Nick Schrapanik. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks so much for listening. We see you again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Red.